Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artists First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all of our shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark. This show airs at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Thursday. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark, Lisa and Nancy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark. We're airing live from Artist First. Do you know that Artist First has been on the air for over 20 years? We're heard in 130 countries by 245 million people. We have a great show for you tonight. We have Jesse Sinsack on, who's going to give us our Bachelor update. You know, Nancy and I are obsessed with The Bachelor. We have Dr. Ish Major and Tina Sloan. So grab your martini, slip into something comfortable, put on your best high heels, and stay and spend the hour with us chatting about nonsense. Hi, Nancy.
That's right. How are you tonight, Lisa?
I'm good. We're going to start a new thing here. We're going to talk about products that we love every week. Right?
Oh, we've got lots to tell. We're going to limit it to one per week.
I know. I use about 30 products a day to get myself out the door. From toothpaste, from brushing until my final spritz of hairspray.
Right. Now, I use that much at night because I want all of the cream on my face when I sleep so that I wake up, you know, with less baggage.
So tell everybody this week, what is your product of the week?
Well, my product this week, last hour we did have on Laura Geller makeup. And I have to say, I am in love with her, the Laura Geller makeup bronzer, Bronze and Brighten. It's a color corrective. It has pigments, and it's just a fabulous bronzer. It's baked, and it just creates a really dewy, but it's matte. And sometimes if I don't feel like wearing a lot of makeup or no makeup, I just throw on this little bit of Bronze and Brightener, and out the door I go.
Yeah, I have that, too. I like that, too.
We love it.
Yeah.
What's yours?
One of my favorite products, and I've been using it for years, is Clinique Body Sloughing Cream. It comes in a jar. I think you get it in a tube as well. And it makes you feel so clean. You put it on before you get in the shower. It's like a scrub all over your whole body.
And what's it smell like?
Minty, menthol-y kind of.
Okay.
It smells pretty. It smells pretty. And you just slough it all over your whole body. You know, your rear end, your chest, your arms, your elbows, your knees, everything. Then you get in the shower, wash it off. Your skin is like silk, and you're nice and tingly, and it feels so refreshed. So that's my product of the week.
Fabulous.
Well, let's spend more time talking about products. We have more important things to talk about. The Bachelor. Ben the Boar. He is so boring, I can't stand it. I'm like, oh.
If there's any guys watching, I have a couple products of the week. I was changing my car today, or changing oil in my car today. When I undid the oil filter, I got about 3 quarts of oil down my sleeve. So, I'm nice and bronzed. I have a nice bohemian bronzing tint on my right arm. And for all the rest of the guys listening out there, for all you iPhone lovers, I just recently got in contact with a company called LifeProof. They make fully waterproof iPhone cases, and they are absolutely amazing. So check them out, LifeProof.com. And yes, you started the show out with a big word, nonsense, and that's exactly what The Bachelor is this season. Holy moly. I don't even know where to start. Ben, what I would love to do is interview his mother, because what could his mother and his sister possibly think about this woman after watching this season of the show? My mom would answer the door with a shotgun. That's just my mom. There'd be absolutely no way in God's given creation that she would let that woman anywhere near me. Holy smokes. I mean, he's got...
Right?
Yeah, good Lord. Is he serious? I mean, the biggest thing that cracked me up was the fact that she tells him, oh, I don't know if I can take you home to meet my mom and dad. Whoa, 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 whoa. didn't you just get naked for him twice and then ride him naked in the ocean, but now you're not sure if you want to meet your parents? Did I miss something? Well, I mean, what do you think would happen to Tim Tebow if they caught him in a strip club? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They would crucify the guy. What's the difference here? There is none. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Blows my mind. It makes the hair on the back of my neck raise up. She is absolutely here 110% for her career. And I would not be surprised whatsoever if the producers cast her for this role and put some coin in her pocket to do it, because there's absolutely no one that I know that would go on national television in front of 15 million people every week and commit what I would call surname suicide.
Right.
You know? Come on. Would you want your kid on national television acting like that? No. My dad would punch me in the teeth. No, she's not pretty at all. And for anyone who's interested in knowing what Ben's kids would look like with any of the girls that are left in the show, go on to my YouTube page and check out Richard Matthews' latest Reality Smackdown Countdown, and he has photos that were computer-generated of what each one of the girls and Ben's kid would look like, and they're pretty funny, so you should check them out.
Let's hear about Emily. What do you think about her being the next Bachelorette? Recycled people. We need some new people.
I'm gonna recycle a joke here. What do you think would happen if we caught Tim Tebow in a strip club? Okay, this is Emily. Oh, I don't want to be in the limelight. I can't stand the cameras and the media. I just wanted to find love. Wait a minute. You just signed up to be on The Bachelor again. Did I miss something? Oh, and you were just seen filming a new TV show with Trista and Allie and Ashley Hebert. Sounds like another Stage 5 gold digger to me. Sorry, Emily.
Yep. Absolutely. She's like, you want to punch her in the face. She's like annoying.
Yeah.
Annoying.
Ugh. It's like, blows my mind. I don't see this show lasting much longer than Emily's season. Rob Mills, ABC. Yeah, if Rob Mills is listening, he's the ABC exec that signs this. Buddy, I'd start looking for some new talent because The Bachelor has run its course.
Yeah, the recycled. First of all, Ashley is the Bachelorette. That's when it started going downhill. And then now Ben, who seems like a very nice guy. He's probably a nice guy, but boring as The Bachelor. And then now Emily, who's just annoying, you don't even like, you're going to punch her in the face.
I would say the last legitimate season was Jason Mesnick's, and they took that poor guy and drug him through the ringer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was the last legitimate person that went on that show to find love as The Bachelor or Bachelorette. Well, I think Ashley went on to find love, but she wasn't the most amazing Bachelorette to watch.
Yeah, she was like a little mousy.
I think the problem with her was that she went on there wanting to find love, but what she failed to realize was that there was a multi-million-dollar production crew that was going to tell her what to do the whole time, and she got caught up listening to what they were going to tell her to do and forgot what she was there for.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I think she's an okay girl, but I just think she got caught up in the production end of things.
Yeah, no, I think she's probably a very nice girl, but as far as you have to have somebody with charisma and somebody really exciting to be The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. And
if they want to have an amazing season of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, they need to put on Wes Hayton or David Good. Either one of those guys would be absolutely hilarious. I want to see a girl get out of the limo and the guy take one look at her, because let's be honest, as much as you want to disagree, physical attraction is the first thing that happens.
Of course.
And I want a guy to see her and go, you know what, I'm not even physically attracted to you. Get back in the limo, see you later. That, to me, is a real guy. That's a guy that's going off of feelings and not scared to bite the bullet, you know, because it's his life. Who cares what America thinks? It's his love life. He can do whatever he wants.
I know.
And that's
what I
want to see.
BS. It's the same, I think there's my wife's in the last five. I think my wife's in one of the... It's like the same crap every time. It's getting old.
No doubt.
We've had some great guests on Chit Chat Cafe Live that would be fabulous for The Bachelor.
Hey, if you got any names, let's submit them to Sweet Home Alabama, because I heard that show is actually on the air to find love. We can hook them up.
Oh, that'd be good. Well, Jesse, you are fabulous.
You ladies are fabulous. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it, and call me anytime.
Next week, after the hometown dates.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds great.
Next week. Hey, and we are tweeting and Facebooking and sending everyone your way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Hi to Ann and Noah.
Will do. You guys have a great evening.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's always fun, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're waiting for Dr. Ish Major to join us. Are you with us, Dr. Major?
I sure am.
Oh, we're just so thrilled.
Another friend of our show tonight.
Another friend is right, and it's our second time or third time. Maybe count the Bachelor, the Men Tell All segment, which we're going to have coming up, and Lisa's going to tell us about that. Well, everyone, Chit Chat Cafe Live, we just love having Dr. Major. His book, Little White Ways, Wise.
Little White Wise.
Little White Wise. I have it right here in front of me. Just got released in France.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it.
Well, I know. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's one of the publishing companies about a year or so ago kind of caught wind of it, and they were like, what a fabulous idea. It's perfect for the culture, and you know, we sold the French rights, and this week it goes live over there. So it should be fun. I'm waiting to see how it's all going to work out.
So are you going over?
Well, that's the plan. The plan is for me to go over and do some PR stuff. Definitely want to do some book signings and things like that. So that's what we're working on the dates for as we speak.
Nice. Now, Dr. Major, we can't assume that our listeners, maybe this is their first time hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a little bit about your book?
Sure. You know, Little White Wise, Woman's Guide Through the Lies Men Tell and Why. This is a bare knuckles, bare all look at the lies guys tell women from the moment we meet you until the moment we marry you and beyond. And so it is hardcore, very true, but I tell women all the time, you know, it starts off rough and then it gets nice and cushy towards the end. So make sure you read it through to the end.
Well, it's just wonderful. We love that book. And what are they saying about it in France so far?
You know, so far the reaction has been good because it's, you know, the dating culture in France is a little bit different. And so it's a little more of a blunt dating culture there as far as I understand, men and women. If a guy's on a first date here and a woman, for example, asks him, you know, does he like her dress, then the polite thing is to say yes. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not so much in France. If the woman, you know, guy's girl's on a first date there and she asks him, does he like her dress, he can very well say no and move on to the next topic, and it's not considered rude at all. It's actually considered a good thing because now she knows he's being honest, and that's building trust. So it's a little bit different as far as some cultural considerations go.
That's right.
And
wow.
So the bluntness of my book kind of fits in perfectly with the culture there.
Right. Well, that is exciting. We are just so proud and excited for you. Do you know what else we enjoy? We enjoy your blog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have a link on our website so people can click and read about it. The one about the other side of the pillow.
Oh,
tell us
yes.
About that one.
Oh, yes. Well, you know what? That was such an interesting story. And I'd been thinking about doing something like that for a long time because, you know, it's true. We only typically hear the one side of the story. You know, we'll always hear the woman's side, and rightfully so because it's usually the guy who's in the wrong. But we never hear about, what was actually going on in the guy's mind, and is it always a situation where, you know, the guy's just a rude, inconsiderate jerk who made the decision to, you know, to cheat and didn't hold anything else dear. And, you know, a lot of times, a lot of the stories I'm hearing for guys is that it's just not that way.
Well, what are they saying?
Well, they're saying, look, I don't know how it happened. That's what they're saying, okay? They're saying, listen, they will come in, and it's like a weird Twilight Zone kind of thing. They're sitting there, and they're saying, listen, I love my wife. I'm not sure how we got to this point. You know, there's a, you know, 1 minute everything is okay, and then the next minute I know she's getting threatening text messages and phone calls from this woman who I have no idea how I got let this woman into my life kind of thing. And so
right.
And what I tell the guys is, listen, let's go back and let's examine it, because usually it's not something that happens all at once, right? It's a series of boundaries that get broken little by little.
Well, it's just very exciting to read, and I know that our listeners will love you on Facebook and your blog, everything.
Yep, definitely on Facebook. Getting a lot of good questions and discussions right from Facebook. A lot of good comments from the blog. And that one, The Other Side of the Pill, guys really like that because guys are like, listen, it's finally somebody told our side of the story. Okay?
That's right. That's important.
It's very important to have a voice to know that, listen, every guy who cheats isn't that guy. You know, sometimes it, you know, and it sounds so weird. You know, what do you mean? What do you mean you don't know how you cheated? Of course you know. Of course you decided to cheat. You made a choice. But some guy said, listen, honestly, I don't really ever feel like I made the choice to sleep with somebody else, but I don't know how it happened. And just, you know, and I tell you, listen, here's how it starts. There was a glance that happened and didn't turn away quick enough. Then there was a polite hi, and that hi maybe was followed by a smile. And then there was some type of exchange that may have, you know, gone on a bit too long. And then there was some common ground felt. And from there, maybe some emails were exchanged. Maybe some phone numbers were exchanged. Maybe a polite text or a polite email. And then back and forth, slowly but surely, things, you know, the bond happens because we're human. And then, you know, before you know it, you've crossed boundary after boundary after boundary, and it's too late to pull out. And the guy I wrote about on my blog, she would not let him pull out. That was the thing there.
Wow.
That's what scared him.
Wow. Well, speaking of cultural differences, I'll make you guys laugh real fast.
Good.
It really is amazing. I have some friends in India. They have no qualms about telling me I'm fat. They think, and then I get insulted because I'm not fat.
No, time out, everyone. Lisa's gorgeous.
No, I'm not fat, but I guess I'm chubby compared to people in India who are so skinny. Like, they tell me I'm fat. And I'm like, F you. How dare you say that to me?
Wow.
And they're like, why? Why are you insulted? They don't understand because I guess that's culturally acceptable there to say,
wow,
to tell somebody they're fat. Could you imagine doing that here? It would never in a million years.
That
even if somebody's, you know, huge, you would never do that.
No, it just would not fly. No.
Mm-hmm. No. No, and I try to explain that to them. I'm like, you know what? Anyway, what do you think is the absolute biggest lie that men tell? What is a universal lie that 99% of the men tell women? What do you think it is? Is there one particular, like, I'll call you and then they don't, that kind of thing? Or
That's a very common one. I think the biggest lie guys tell women is the very first one where they say, yeah, I'm available.
Oh, and they're married. Or
well, not necessarily even married. They could just have a girlfriend. They could be in an otherwise committed relationship. They could, you know, they could totally not even be interested in dating, but it's one of those things. Guys just, in that situation, a lot of guys just aren't going to say no. They just aren't. They're going to see where this goes. You know, we're going to just play this out and see what happens. Maybe yes, maybe no. We'll just see. But I think that's the most common one because, you know, and unfortunately, that gets the whole relationship started off on the wrong foot because now the wrong expectations have been set.
What do you think? What? Let's get with the times here.
Mm-hmm.
What is the etiquette now for dating? Is it acceptable for women to text men first? Do men expect it? Is it still old-fashioned where do men still? Is it still basically the men like to be the pursuer, or nowadays they want women to pursue them? What's going on now?
The game has definitely changed now. It's a lot different. And you know, the technical side of things has made that a lot different. As far as internet dating and text messaging and things like that goes, it's totally acceptable now for the woman to make the first move because it's not such a bold first move. It's just a text, or it's just an email, or it's just a poke, or it's just something like that. So that's totally okay, and guys are into it. Guys like, you know, just like women, guys like to know that they're wanted also, and a lot of guys love to be chased. It's just, you know, it's back and forth, and it may not be the whole time in the relationship, but guys say, you know what, she was different, she was aggressive, she, you know, I knew she liked me, and I liked the fact that, you know, I liked the fact that she looked at me and saw what she wanted, and she went for it.
Really? I thought things were maybe still old-fashioned where the guy really wants to do the pursuing. They don't like a girl that chases them.
Yeah, some guys are changing on that. Some guys definitely like for the role to be reversed a little bit.
What do you prefer?
You know, I think as long as it's genuine and honest, for me, perfect, personally, it doesn't matter. You know, it really doesn't matter. I'm a big chemistry person, and so as long as that's right, it doesn't matter who's pursuing who, you know, personally for me. If the chemistry is there,
so there's no, it's not a turn off if a girl texts you first. You don't feel like annoyed by it or
Not at all. Because, you know, the hope is if she actually has my phone number, then I like her. So it's okay.
Right, right. That's true. That's
yeah.
true. Nancy, you have any other questions?
Well, I would like to know, what do you think about, like, blind dates?
Mm-hmm. Well,
are they people still doing blind dates?
I know folks who have gone on blind dates, and they have been blind date disasters. And by the other side, on the other hand, I know folks who've gone on blind dates, and they've gone on to marry that person and live happily ever after for 30-plus years. And so it just depends. And a lot of people say this rule on blind dates. If it's a best friend setup, I mean somebody who knows you, who really, really knows you, and the other person, a lot of times that goes very, very well because they say, well, you know, somebody who's your best friend, they may know things about you that you don't really notice about yourself, and they can kind of see who you'd be good for. And so I think it just kind of depends. It's one of those deals in the true spirit of the blind date. It's just one of those things you have to be open to, show up, and see what happens because there's really no hard and fast rules for if it's going to go well or not.
Well, that's true. So what about the weekend that's coming up? Are you advising everyone to continue celebrating Valentine's weekend or enjoying winter cold together? Where do people go to meet their dates these days?
Well, you know, people go, and that's the tough question because the answer is everywhere. And so it's everywhere. It's on your way to work. It's at the grocery store. It's at the car wash. It's at the gym. It's at the movies. And here's a tip. It's okay to go alone to the movies. But the point is, you've got your best chance of finding someone while you're in the midst of your daily or weekly routine. Now, the problem with that routine is it just tends to get just that. It tends to be routine. So you've got to remember to pay attention. That's the big deal.
Right. You have to keep, they say, looking for love's like a taxi cab. You need your light on, and people, you know, they the aura is around you, and they can tell you're open to something new.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You've got to remember to pay attention, and it's just one of those things. And the likelihood of you now having something more in common with the person you meet in your daily routine is that much higher because they're kind of in the same circles, doing some of the same things, going some of the same places that you go. So now there's much more to talk about on that initial conversation. So I tell folks, listen, make sure you pay attention. You never know. You might be stuck in traffic next to the love of your life today, and all you've got to do is look over. Never know.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's true. Now, what do you think about older women and younger men? That seems to be like the norm now, like the cougar stuff.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Like say a woman's in her 50s and the guy's in his 20s or 30s. What do you think about that? Do you think it's a disaster or do you think it could work out?
You know, it depends. And the big thing that depends on, in the short term, it can absolutely positively work out. In the long term, the one issue always seems to be children. You know, if the guy wants to have a children and she's kind of past childbearing age or, you know, she's already had hers, just as well, that seems to be the one sticking point down the road as the guy kind of matures and grows into, you know, late 20s, early 30s types of thing. And
mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
As long as that expectation has been clearly laid out, that I've seen it work. I really have. You know, guys will say this. They say, well, you know what, we like older women because here's the word they use all the time, guys. They're more refined. They have their style. They have that sense of confidence. They're not really trying too hard. They don't have anything else to prove. They have much, much more in-depth conversation. You know, the art of flirting is a little more subtle, so it's a little more sexy. So the younger guys who date older women, these are the things they're saying.
Yeah, no, that's it's very true. You see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, you know, from a professional standpoint, what you thought of it.
Yeah, I think it can work. The one sticking point seems to be as things
children
move forward, right? Because once that drive hits for guys to kind of want to be fathers, then that's a huge deal. So it's now like, okay, what do we do now? So you've had to have had that conversation before that time hits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Ish, we just think the world of you. We can't wait to have you on again. Well, March 29th.
Sounds good to me.
For the men tell all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was fun last time, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we're inviting everyone who's listening to send us your questions, and
okay,
we'll be ready to go. Well, thank you so much, and good luck in France.
Oh, thank you so much, Nancy. Thanks, Lisa.
Can
thanks
we come
so much
with
for
you?
Having me back
Can we come
home
with you as your assistant?
Hey, absolutely. As long as, hopefully, your French is better than mine. And
I know. Oui, bonjour, bonsoir.
Listen, I think we can muddle through. It'll be fine.
Well, when you're sipping champagne, think of us.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Always great. Yeah. Always great to have Dr. Ish Major on our show. So we are going to take a quick commercial. We'd like to thank our sponsors tonight, Laura Geller Makeup, Intimacy Bras, and St. Croix Orthopedics. And stay tuned. We're going to be joined by Tina Sloan.
And now back to Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark on the Artist First World Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Our next guest is very cool. She was on The Guiding Light as Lillian Raines, and she's had a 3.5-decade-long career on the soaps. Tina's a playwright, theatrical actress, co-author, and star in her one-woman show, Changing Shoes, and she's appeared in The Black Swan with Natalie Portman. Welcome, Tina.
Hi, thank you.
This is quite the honor.
It's the honor for me, too.
So tell us, what's it like? What did you feel like when they were going to cancel The Guiding Light?
Oh, I was devastated. It was on April Fool's Day, so I sort of hoped it was a joke, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we all just were walking around. We couldn't believe it. And they told us it would happen, but I sort of thought I'd become a grandmother, a great-grandmother, a great-great-grandmother, and sort of die in my chair studying my lines. I just never thought it would end.
I know. It's like the end of an era. I mean,
it is the end of an era.
I know my mother watched The Guiding Light since I think it was on.
72 years it was on.
Well, maybe, yeah. Well, she's 75. She's been watching a long time. So now you were on The Black Swan. Tell us about that. That must have been cool.
It was really cool. I remember I went into this audition, and the producer looked at me, and he said, okay, you look the part. They wanted a socialite, so I sort of dressed in, you know, a little black Armani suit and pearls and all of, you know, the big handbags and things.
The Chanel look.
Yeah, the Chanel look. It's exactly what I did. And he said, okay, you look the part, but you know how to act. And I went, oh, dear, 35 years on a soap. I said, yes, I've done a lot of movies. And he said, all right, read this line. And I remember my line was, Victor, come and meet Lillian. She's from Texas. No, she is Texas. It was hilarious. It was just sort of a fun line. Mm-hmm. And I must have read it for him 17 times, seriously. And I got it. I knew I was going to get it when he had me read it 17 times, but for that one line. And then I went into the dressing room to do my shoot. It was at night. We arrived around 11 at night. And Natalie Portman was on one side, and Winona Ryder was on the other, and I was seated between them. And I said, hi, I'm Tina Sloan. They both said hi. And then I decided to play this card that I had in my hand that they didn't know, or Natalie didn't know, because she was a great friend of my son's at Harvard. So I said, okay, I'm Rennie McPherson's mother. And she jumps out of the chair, and all of a sudden I was part of the group, and I was invited to have dinner with them. And, you know, but it was interesting that it wasn't being me, it was being my son's mother that made all the difference with everybody. And this is part of the changing shoes template that I talk about, you know, that all of a sudden you're not the star, it's your child that's the star, or your, you know, or the younger people, which is as it should be. But it was just so obvious at that moment. You know, she went, oh, I just saw him at a wedding last weekend, and on and on and on. And I thought, ah, oh, that's the card you have to play now.
Whatever works, right? Whatever
that's
works.
That's right, whatever works.
Yeah, your book, Changing Shoes, I love the where you have to click on the shoe on your site. That's
yes.
So cute.
Thank you.
That was very clever.
Thank you.
I'm a shoe freak. I love shoes. Are you a shoe lover?
Oh, yes, I love them. I love them. I love them. I made these bags. I should have sent you one if I'd known you love shoes. On one side is a black flat, and the other side is a high heel, and it's a very good plastic bag, and you can put your flats in it when you're walking to a party, your high heels in it when you're
Ooh.
Walking to a party, and then when you get there, you put your flats in it. And
we
so,
need that. We're always, like, schlepping these little bags.
That's right.
Yeah.
And this is a really cute plastic bag, and it says Changing
oh.
Shoes on it. It's white
oh.
with a black.
Do you sell them?
I do sell them. People see them and they say, can I buy 20 for Christmas or for my friends or for a party or something? I haven't really gone crazy, but I was out in Denver and someone bought 50. So I thought, well, this is going to work. It's just that I've got to put my energy into it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd love to have one.
Okay.
Yes, they would be fabulous.
They're really happy. And they're good, thick plastic, so... You know, it's not going to break like if you had your shoes and something else. And you walk in and everyone goes, oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, it sounds adorable. Sounds right up our alley. Now, tell us about your book. What the premise is about aging and...
Well, it's going from the high heels to the black flats.
Right.
That's literally what it's about. And it's being able, you know, I mean, I was 65 when the show went off the air, and I was able to reinvent myself and go all over the country doing this play that I've written and the book. I mean, President George H.W. and Barbara Bush were in the front row in Houston recently when I did it.
Wow.
Which was really, you know, I don't care what your politics are. I just was beside myself. I happen to love him.
Yeah.
But just to see their faces watching me do this, and they came back, and she loved the book, and they loved the play, and it just made me feel that if this hadn't happened, if Guiding Light hadn't gone off, I would have stayed there forever, and hopefully. And this way, I was sort of forced out of my comfort zone like everybody is these days because everyone's losing their jobs. And I was able to, you know, reinvent myself and maybe become more interesting in the process.
I was going to say it's a good thing. I believe things happen for a reason. And now that you're doing something exciting, and it's never too late to do that.
No, it's not. And I think when I talk around the country. And when I talk to groups of women. I did it for 1,800 women the other day in New Orleans. And they all, not they all, but a lot of them came up to me after and said, you know, it's just having a mentor out in front that has made this switch, that you just keep going, you know, putting one well-shod foot in front of the other.
Yeah, and it's good so people don't see that when you, you know, pass a certain age, you're not going to sit home in a corner curled up with a shawl.
Right. Some of my friends said, oh, good, now that the show's off, you'll be able to play bridge and golf with us. And I thought, no, I won't. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. You know, no, and it's good. You're really an inspiration, honestly. It's, you know, because Nancy and I are, you know, older than we used to be. And, you know, you start feeling like, you know, our kids are in college. And
yeah, you're getting there.
Feeling like, now what? Now what? You know, now,
and it was,
you know,
fun for us to reinvent our careers and start this radio show.
Right, right.
What do you mean?
So,
when you say reinvent them.
We reinvented ourselves with this new, with our radio show.
Oh, with your, I thought you said after. I couldn't figure it out. Yes, with your radio show. Yes, you have. As a matter of fact, Valerie Ramsey, I had lunch with the other day, who I gather her daughter was involved with you too?
She started us off, and then she decided to pursue her writing, so she left us.
She wrote the book with her mom. Yep. But isn't that a funny thing that I'm having lunch with her and we're talking about Chit Chat Cafe? And she said, oh my goodness, my daughter was part of that.
Yeah, we've had Valerie on. In fact, we met her. We went to California and we hung out with her. We went to lunch with her. Yeah,
oh,
Wally.
She's so fun. And Wally.
Lovely.
Yeah, I had dinner. I had lunch with Wally, too.
Lovely people.
Yeah,
very
really
nice.
Are. And she and I are on the exact same path, so we're thinking of how we can merge this and do something bigger with it, you know? Maybe cable show or
fabulous.
Something.
Because I always looked up to that. That's how I met Valerie. I had read her book. I was feeling depressed a couple of years ago. I was feeling old when my son was applying to colleges. And I saw her on the Today Show, and then I bought her book, and I read it, and I wrote to her, and I said, it was such an inspiration that there's hope. Like, you know, your world doesn't stop when your kids leave the nest.
No, they don't. It really doesn't. It's knowing that and not giving up, you know. So many people just say, okay, I've gone the distance, and forgetting that there are another 3 miles they have to go or whatever in a marathon. And you just, it's so important to keep reinventing.
Yes, I believe that. And I feel blessed because early on, you know, in our careers and then when you had babies, mm-hmm. so that was all wonderfully perfect and in my dream and my plans. But now that I'm into reinventing myself, I just love life even more.
Well, and you have time for yourself. I mean, when we all have our children, we don't have a whole lot of time for ourselves and to figure out what it is we want to do. And then when they're grown up, we all of a sudden say, hey, there's a space for me in here. You know, they'd rather be with their friends or rather be out doing what they like to do, and you have time to really think about what you want. And you know what I've realized? It's something you loved when you were younger. When you were a little girl, maybe you made pretend radio shows, but when you're little, there's something that you really love, and people don't think of it right away, but I've gotten calls a few weeks later saying, oh, my Lord, I woke up in the middle of the night and remembered how I loved animals and how I wanted to be a veterinarian, so I'm going to work for the Humane Society. And I just think there are things, you know, paper dolls, I don't know what it was that people love, but that seems to be what, as you get older and you have the free time, you can reinvent yourself to do. And I talk about that in the book. In Changing Shoes, that there are ways to find out who or what you should really be doing with your life when you have the time. And, you know, people have to work now because there isn't much money out there. So finding something to work at that you really, really will enjoy is a really crucial thing to do so that you love getting up and going to work.
Do you think it's harder for women as you get older to find gigs, though? Jobs.
I don't think so. I mean, I was at the movies the other day, and there were quite elderly people working there, and I thought, you know, someday I might do this. What a great way to see the movies. You're with people all day long. You're helping them, in a sense. And, you know, I love movies, so this would be a great thing for me to do. But maybe it's working in a hospital. No, I don't think it's harder for women. I think in a way, we might be better off as we get older, because unless we had huge jobs at Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or something, you know, in the world where I think, and the tech world too, I think being young in the tech world is very important. Mm-hmm. Twitter, Facebook, Google, you know, they're all, I think, young people industries. But there are so many that as you get older that look for women who have had a certain life and experience, and I really do believe they want people like that.
Yeah, I hope.
No, I hope too.
We were just talking to Dr. Ish about it. Like, younger men find older women really fascinating, which dumbfounds me.
You know, by younger men, what age range are you talking about?
I'm talking 30-year-old men, or 20-year-old men,
right?
You know, with 40-year-old women, or 50-year-old women, or 30-year-olds with 60-year-old women. Yeah,
really?
Very common.
Wow, I missed this one. I better find that channel.
No,
I mean, Ashton Kutcher or somebody, you know, the obvious ones come to mind, but I don't know that I've seen that many. I can see a 20-year-old thinking a 35-year-old would be interesting because they are interesting at that point, and they're still glorious and young and beautiful, but I don't see a 30-year-old thinking a 50-year-old, for instance, or a 45, maybe 45. But I think you hit a stage where you are older, and even though you might be interesting, you're certainly not going to be a subject of lust. Unless you've been lucky.
Right.
Something I don't know.
How many children do you have, Tina?
What?
How many children do you have?
I have one son.
And is he in the business?
No, he's not. He's down in Washington, D.C. He went to Harvard, went into the Marine Corps right after 9/11.
Wow, impressive.
Yeah, he went to Iraq a few times and came back and went to Harvard Business School, and he's now working in D.C.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
He's out of the Marines for good.
Well, we thank him for his service.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was something. And I think, you know, it's an amazing growing up process, as you can imagine, to go from the, you know, the cocoon of college life to the deserts of Iraq.
Exactly. Well, the soldiers are in my prayers daily.
Mine too. So worried about... I did a movie, as a matter of fact, called Happy New Year, where I play the mother of a very badly wounded Marine who comes back from Afghanistan and Iraq into a VA hospital. And I tell you, it's with post-traumatic stress disorder, and as well as physically, he's very badly wounded. And it was... I mean, I didn't have to do anything to have the emotions for that movie, as you can imagine. But it's a very, very scary movie in that 30% of these soldiers who are going to come home are going to have post-traumatic stress disorder, and a lot of them commit suicide.
They do, and that is so sad.
Yeah, I mean, the war toll, not only the ones killed over there, if they added the ones killed here when they get home, it would be much higher, obviously.
So we do all that we can. A lot of our listeners are military and their families abroad.
Oh, boy, am I on your side.
Yeah.
I mean, I just am such... I'm such a Marine mom. I heard the greatest thing. Nobody's tougher than the mother of a Marine.
I like that.
I did too. I think that's great. And I think it goes for every single one of the services, obviously. The moms or the wives or the children or the husbands of these soldiers are just so, so brave. And I, you know, I sent my books over to Afghanistan to these women who were Marines because they've said that changing shoes helped them. So I said, this one wrote me on Twitter, as a matter of fact, and said, you know, it's really, we read this book and we think about what we want to do when we get home, and it's really helped. So I sent tons of the books over there so they could all read them.
I love that. That's really nice. Well, speaking of changing shoes, and thank you very much for sending us your book, because we love to read it and share them with our Chit Chat Cafe Live book club.
Oh, wonderful.
I really enjoyed, I'm a teacher, so... Page 146, everyone. The when list. Tell us about that.
Well, the reason I wrote this book was I was taking care of my mother and father, who were getting very, very old. They died when they were 91, both of them, within a very short time of each other. And my mother's mind, she had very bad senility, and my father had terrible cancer. So, you know, I was dealing with both of them, and I thought, there were so many things I didn't know to do, so I wrote down everything. I called people literally all over the world and said, what did you not know to do? And I compiled this list of things that one needs to do. And I went, this man I met who was a lawyer said, I would have charged $70,000 for that list. He said, that list is invaluable. And I've had people say to me, you know, until I read your book, I never thought to do a will. I never thought to do a power of attorney. I never thought to do a living will. And all of these, I mean, I have lists, as you see in that book, that I just thought, I'm going to warn the generation coming after me to take care of these things, not only for themselves, but for their parents. And I find also that you want to have your parents do this when they're young, before they get old and scared, when they get really old and they see, you know, death is the next thing, it's terrifying, and they don't want to face that they have to get a living will and that they have to get a power of attorney and that they have to have their wills up to date because they don't want to deal with it. So you want to have your parents or you do it in their 60s probably or even 50s, but to get these things taken care of. And, you know, even things like your passwords on your computer have to be on a list. You know,
right.
There are things we don't think of. And... a friend of mine who's a very powerful woman in New York called me and said, Tina, I don't have a will. And I was dumbfounded because she's really powerful and bright. And, people don't seem to get around to doing these things. So the when list was sort of my legally blonde idea, was just a list of all the things you want to take care of and the other little extra things, like, you know, if you want to photograph all the things in your house and put a tag on who it goes to, or where you got it. You know, your great grandmother had given it to you, and ask your family to keep it in the family, or talk. I remember my father when he was dying; he'd been in World War II in the Navy, and he started telling me stories about it and I wrote them all down, and I thought, I wish I'd asked him these things much, much earlier and asked more questions. And that's the thing when I asked people around the world what they wish they'd done. Without doubt, people said, I wish I'd asked the questions that I'll never have the answers to now.
Me too.
Isn't it something?
Yes.
And
now
and
it's too late.
It is too late. And so that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I didn't want it to be too late for other people. I wanted them to read this and say, okay, I'm going to ask those questions. And sometimes they're very embarrassing or hard or whatever, but if you don't get it, you never get the answers, ever, ever, ever. And that's so sad.
It is. And that's exactly how my personality is, to think of these things ahead of time, you know, or be organized about it. Even little trinkets of things that I had from my own childhood,
yes.
I have them in a little box with a little note explaining it, because what if my grandchildren would like to someday know, why did she have this?
That's a wonderful thing to do. It's just wonderful. But it is an organizational skill that a lot of people don't have and don't want to bother with. And yet, you know, if they do, I found it took me quite a few months to do all of this work, this long-term health care insurance, and I had to do it all for my parents as well. But it was boring. You know, you go into these rooms, you meet these lawyers, and you listen to that Muzak or whatever, and you think, why am I doing this? But once you do it, it's like you've just taken pounds off your body, you know?
Exactly. I think it's, and it's not something that needs to be looked at as a negative thing. It's kind of fun to go through your things.
Well, that's fun, but I think when you're doing some of the legal things, it's not as much fun.
Right.
I mean, it is fun, of course, to go through your things, and I talk about changing shoes, how all of a sudden I realized I'd gotten older and I couldn't wear strapless dresses anymore, so I don't know if you read that, but where I wrapped them all up and I sent them to my niece, and how hard that was to admit the fact that I could never show my arms anymore because they're yicky, you know, all flabby, and they're just not pretty anymore. So I just always wear little sweaters or long sleeve shirts. And I was walking on the beach today. I'm in Florida right now with two of my friends, and we all had on long sleeve shirts, hats, and long pants. And I said, I used to look at women like us and think, what is the matter with them, when I was in my little bikini? But now I understand, you know, you can't get too much sun. It's so tedious. You don't want to necessarily show your body off. I'm not embarrassed to the point where I don't go swimming and do all those things. But you all of a sudden look at yourself and go, ooh. And it's time to pass on these new dresses to my niece or to your daughters or friends or whatever who still can wear them. I was just keeping them in my closet because they had such nice memories attached to them.
So you know what I did? Similar, only I took pictures of those things, so I would always have the picture.
Oh, good for you.
Of hopefully me wearing it or the shoes at a fun party or something, and that way I can get rid of the things, and pictures are easier to keep.
Oh, good for you. That is, I wish I'd known. I would have put that in the book. That's a great idea.
Oh.
No, it really is. That's a great idea.
I love to simplify.
Yeah. How do you simplify, like, your closet?
Oh, it's fun. I make it a game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell myself, okay, 25. I'm going to go through pick 25 things and either donate them or share them with someone else that could use them. And so I make it a little game like that.
And you pick 25 as the number?
Yes, 25. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but it's 25. Or I'll go around my whole house like that, all right? And so I'll pick 25 things. And if I pick up the number 26, I have to start all over again.
But when you, and then you give, that's to give them away, to give away 25 things, yes.
To my church or to other, you know, organizations that need it.
No, I mean, we don't need three coats or four coats. We need maybe two. We might need two, a lightweight one, a heavy one. But I went through my coats this year, and there's a place called Bottomless Closet in New York. And I gave them all of that, and they give them to women who go for job interviews.
I love that.
Dressed well. Yeah.
And I gave away all my prom and wedding type gowns, you know, those bridesmaids gowns, to the girls that need to wear them for the proms these days.
That's right. That's just so, it's so much, that I agree. I love giving them to someone who I know is going to make use of them.
But I have just found over the years, by doing all these things that you're talking about, by getting rid of material things other than things I need,
right,
it has really freed me for having a lot more room for joy in my life.
That's lovely. I think, and I really applaud you, but I also understand it. I do think, you know, we give away and then we get back. I mean,
right.
It opens other doors.
So I have a question for you about if you had to pick just one pair of shoes, which pair would be your lifetime favorite?
I have a pair of orange sandals. They have a low heel. I wore them on Guiding Light. We got our clothes from Guiding Light. I wore them, and I had them on last night, and I remember thinking as I put them on, I looked down, and they're very thin little straps, and they're very low heel. I mean, thin heel, but it's like a high heel. And they just make me feel good about myself. So I suppose I could see myself wearing these into my 90s because they're not too high and they're still feminine. And I love the femininity. I think that's very important. And I love the memory that they were Guiding Light shoes, that I wore them on the soap.
Do you are you into the designer shoes like the Louboutins and Jimmy Choo?
No.
Do you go to Saks and spend that kind of money on shoes?
No, I don't. I have trouble spending money on things. I wouldn't get a facelift because that costs like $20,000. I'd much rather do something with that. I mean, take a trip or something, or make myself more interesting, hopefully, or help my son pay off his college debts, or I'm not that kind of person. I was in Palm Beach yesterday, walking down Worth Avenue, which is this very expensive.
Oh, I know about it, yeah.
Okay. And, it's fun to look in the windows, but I wasn't going to go buy anything because, first of all, I don't, as you just said, I don't really need things. I have a lot of pretty things that I've bought over the years, but I have a pair of Chanel shoes that the show gave me that I use in my play because it's kind of based on that. But I'm not going to go spend money on Jimmy Choo shoes. I find that personally to be ridiculous.
I love shoes too, but I would never, if I had that kind of money, like you said, I would either buy an airline ticket somewhere or I would give it to my kids.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's too much worthwhile. I suppose if we had billions of dollars, but even if I had billions of dollars, I don't think that's the way I'd spend it. And yet I appreciate that some people, I just think if you need to do that, it's sort of, you need to do it because you maybe don't have confidence in yourself, and so you have to show you have the labels of all these important shoes. I love beautiful shoes, but they just don't have to be expensive. J. Crew has some great sandals, just great sandals. I have a pair of gold and silver, and I wear them all the time.
Yeah, I have, because I love red patent leather shoes, and you can buy them at Nordstrom's and Macy's, and they're reasonably priced. They're not crazy, and now, where is your play? Is you said your play travels all over?
It does. I just did it in Palm Beach, as a matter of fact, at the Four Arts, which is this very lovely theater. And I've done it all over the country. I mean, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Houston.
Is it going to be in New York again?
It was just in New York, and I hope New York needs it to be a little darker than it is. It's very sort of fun and, I mean, people cry. I mean, there are moments in it that are very sad. It's about an hour and 10 minutes. And if I'm going to do a real New York run, I mean, a long one, I think it's got to be changed a little. And I'm working right now on doing that, as a matter of fact,
seeing if
I like it. Well, I'll let you know. Are you in the city?
Yeah, we'd love to come, yes.
I'm in New Jersey, so I go to New York all the time.
Huh.
Do you live in New York or do you live in Florida?
I live in New York.
Oh, okay. Maybe we can meet you when we're all there.
Absolutely. I'm in Florida now for another month because I'm doing something down here. As I said, I just did the play and I'm about to do another one. And I'm talking at the Honda PGA Golf Classic. Is that a ride?
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
it is cool. But I will be back in late March to do. I do these web series, online.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever watch those on the computer?
Yes, we love those.
Okay, I'm in Venice, and I'm in Empire. And I'm going back to do a week of Empire out in Southampton in the end of March, and then I'll be in New York.
Oh, wow.
Well, we'll have to get the links for those.
Venice the series and Empire the series.
Okay.
They're fun. You know, a lot of soap people do them, of course, because, we love working.
Oh, well, we love your book, Changing Shoes. And we love your website. And thank you very much for
posting about
Chit Chat Cafe Live.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm thrilled to do that.
Well, we must say we love you. And
thank
we cannot
you.
Wait. We'd love to meet you in person.
Absolutely.
And see your play. And
great. I'd love you too.
Please join us again on Chit Chat Cafe
Live. Do you know,
Live.
When you go to my website, changingshoes.com, Tina, or you can go to Tina Sloan, I think, as well, but changingshoes.com, it has where the plays are going to be next. I think the next one maybe is Watch Hill. It may be Toronto.
We'll find out.
Okay, and then if New York, I'll put it in if the New York dates come up. You know, I put it on there so people can come.
We'd love to see it.
Okay,
great.
Thank you.
Well, Tina, thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's nice to meet you, Nancy and Lisa.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good night. Tell Valerie said hi.
Okay, I will. Bye.
Great. Bye.
Bye.
Lisa,
we are so blessed. We had an excellent show tonight.
We are just so blessed to talk to everyone on our Chit Chat Cafe Live show. And
such nice people. Oh, my God.
Yes. So we're all blessed having fabulous people sponsor our show, Laura Geller Makeup, Intimacy Bras, and St. Croix Orthopedics. If you are listening and are interested in being a sponsor or advertising on our Chit Chat Cafe Live show, please contact us, chitchatcafelive@yahoo.com. A great big thank you to Corey King for being our fabulous producer. You can enjoy the Corey King Show live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on Artist First.
And we'd like to thank our guests, Jesse Sinsack about The Bachelor, Dr. Ish Major, and Tina Sloan. And I'm reminding everybody to enjoy our show archives. Just go to our site, scroll down to the show you'd like to listen to, click the date, and enjoy some of our past shows. Good night, Nancy, and I'd like to leave everybody with a fun quote tonight. As Katharine Hepburn once said, if you follow all the rules, you miss all the fun. Good night, everybody.
Good night.